Welcome back to the Mbaga Media Finance Podcast. Today, we're diving deep into a metric that often sends shivers down the spine of income-focused investors, the dividend payout ratio.
That's right. Seeing a company cut or suspend its dividend can feel like a gut punch, impacting both your income stream and your portfolio's value. It makes you question the company's financial health, and often, the dividend payout ratio is one of the first things we scrutinize.
Exactly. This ratio gives us a snapshot of how much of a company's profit is being returned to shareholders. A low ratio typically suggests a safe dividend, with room for growth or weathering tough times.
But what happens when that ratio climbs, especially when it goes above 100%? That's the intriguing scenario we're exploring today. It sounds like a red flag, right? A company paying out more than it earns seems unsustainable.
It certainly sounds alarming. But as we'll discuss, the reality is often far more nuanced. The simple calculation of dividends per share divided by earnings per share can be misleading in certain situations, and understanding those nuances is key for any dividend investor.
So, today we're going to decode the dividend payout ratio, understand why it might exceed 100% without being a dire warning, and look at some real-world examples. Let's start by exploring the core reasons behind these high ratios.
One of the most critical distinctions is between accounting earnings and actual cash flow. Reported earnings on the income statement can be influenced by non-cash items like depreciation and amortization.
That's a crucial point. Depreciation reduces reported profit, but it doesn't mean cash is leaving the company's bank account in that period. So, a company might have strong cash generation, but its earnings look weak due to these non-cash charges.
Precisely. This is where free cash flow, or FCF, becomes a much more telling metric. FCF is the cash a company generates after accounting for the capital expenditures needed to maintain its assets. It's a better indicator of a company's true ability to pay dividends.
So, a company could have a payout ratio over 100% based on earnings, but if its free cash flow is robust, the dividend might still be perfectly safe. It's like the reported profit is artificially low because of accounting rules, not a lack of actual cash.
Exactly. Another factor that can distort the earnings-based payout ratio is the presence of non-recurring items. These are one-time events that aren't part of the company's normal operations.
Like restructuring costs, legal settlements, or asset write-downs? Those can significantly slash net income for a specific period, making the dividend look like a huge burden.
Or conversely, a large one-time gain from selling off a division could inflate earnings. The key is distinguishing these temporary blips from a fundamental decline in the core business's profitability.
That makes sense. So, if the core business is sound and generating consistent cash, a temporary earnings hit shouldn't automatically spell doom for the dividend. It's about looking at the underlying, ongoing business performance.
Absolutely. Now, let's talk about industry characteristics. Certain sectors are inherently more stable and mature, leading to different capital allocation strategies.
You're thinking of industries like utilities, infrastructure, or consumer staples, right? These businesses often have predictable revenues and don't require massive reinvestment for growth.
Precisely. In these mature businesses, management might prioritize returning a larger portion of cash to shareholders because the opportunities for high-return reinvestment are limited. The business model is geared towards stable cash generation and distribution.
So, a higher payout ratio in these stable, mature industries isn't necessarily a sign of weakness, but rather a reflection of a business that has matured and is focused on efficiently distributing its wealth. That's a really important distinction.
Indeed. And let's not forget the special dividend. Sometimes, a company receives a significant one-time cash inflow, perhaps from selling an asset or winning a lawsuit.
And they might decide to reward shareholders with a large, one-off payment. That can definitely skew the payout ratio for that particular year, making it look unsustainably high.
Right. It's crucial to differentiate between these special, non-recurring payouts and the company's regular, ongoing dividend policy. They tell very different stories about dividend sustainability.
Okay, so we've laid the groundwork for understanding why a high payout ratio, even over 100%, isn't always a red flag. Now, let's bring this to life with some case studies. First up, Kenvue.
Kenvue, for those who might not know, is the company behind household names like Band-Aid, Tylenol, and Listerine. It recently spun off from Johnson & Johnson and now operates as an independent consumer health company.
And Kenvue has quickly attracted attention from income investors with a dividend yield well above 5%. However, its earnings-based payout ratio is also hovering above 100%, which naturally raises questions.
To assess Kenvue's payout sustainability, we need to look beyond just that headline earnings figure. The strength of its brand portfolio is a massive asset. These are trusted brands with consistent demand, leading to stable free cash flow generation.
Even if reported earnings are temporarily impacted by the spin-off or other factors, the underlying cash-generating ability of these iconic brands is robust. Management also seems committed to returning capital to shareholders.
Of course, there are risks. The consumer health space is competitive, and executing as a standalone entity has its own challenges. But the deep brand loyalty and significant market share act as powerful mitigating factors.
So, for Kenvue, the high payout ratio calculated on earnings might be a temporary artifact of its recent separation or simply reflect a business model that prioritizes shareholder returns from strong, consistent cash flows. It really emphasizes digging deeper.
Absolutely. Moving on, our next case study is Enbridge, a major player in North American energy infrastructure. They transport oil and natural gas through an extensive network of pipelines and terminals.
Enbridge's business model is attractive for income investors because of its toll-like revenue streams. Much of its income comes from long-term contracts, providing high revenue visibility and stability.
Enbridge is also known as a reliable dividend payer, with a yield often north of 5%. Yet, similar to Kenvue, its earnings-based payout ratio frequently sits above 100%. But this is common in the pipeline and utility sectors.
And the reason is that net income isn't the most appropriate metric for these companies. They rely heavily on distributable cash flow, or DCF, which better reflects the cash generated by their capital-intensive assets.
Exactly. A large portion of their expenses is depreciation, a non-cash charge that significantly reduces reported net income. When you look at Enbridge's dividend coverage using DCF, the picture becomes much more conservative and sustainable.
Their long-term contracts provide a strong foundation, and they're also diversifying into renewables. While regulatory and environmental scrutiny are risks, their cash flow stability is the key driver.
So, for Enbridge investors, the takeaway is that the high net income-based payout ratio is less concerning when viewed through the lens of DCF. It's all about using the right metric for the industry.
Our third case study takes us to the world of real estate investment trusts, or REITs, specifically Realty Income, known as the monthly dividend company.
Realty Income owns a vast portfolio of single-tenant commercial properties under net lease agreements. This means tenants handle most operating expenses, providing Realty Income with a stable, predictable income stream.
They are famous for their monthly dividend and an attractive yield often exceeding 5%. But again, their net income-based payout ratio frequently appears over 100%.
And for REITs, the standard net income metric is not the most appropriate. The go-to measure is funds from operations, or FFO. FFO adjusts net income to better reflect real estate operating performance.
FFO adds back depreciation and amortization, which are significant non-cash expenses for property owners. This often results in a much higher FFO figure compared to net income.
So, a REIT can have an earnings-based payout ratio over 100% but a very healthy FFO-based payout ratio, indicating strong dividend coverage. Realty Income's diversification and focus on creditworthy tenants further bolster its resilience.
Risks like tenant defaults or rising interest rates exist, but for Realty Income investors, the critical insight is to evaluate the dividend based on FFO, not just net income. The model's stability supports that monthly dividend.
These three companies, Kenvue, Enbridge, and Realty Income, really drive home a crucial lesson: the danger of surface-level analysis in investing. Those initial alarm bells from a high payout ratio can be misleading without context.
The key takeaway is the critical importance of using the right metrics for the right type of company. Free cash flow for general corporations, DCF for infrastructure, and FFO for REITs. Relying solely on the earnings-based payout ratio can lead to misjudging dividend sustainability.
And beyond quantitative measures, qualitative factors are just as vital. The stability of a company's business model, management quality, industry trends, and balance sheet strength all play significant roles.
When are dividend cuts truly likely? It's usually tied to a consistent, fundamental decline in cash flow generation, rising debt levels, or significant industry disruption without a clear strategy. It's rarely a sudden event for well-managed firms.
Let's expand on that, investigate further idea. It means understanding the quality of earnings. Are they sustainable and recurring, or propped up by one-off events? This is where qualitative analysis shines.
Like Kenvue's iconic brands. That brand equity creates a moat, making cash flows resilient. Even if reported earnings are temporarily hit by spin-off costs, the underlying demand for its products remains strong.
And with Enbridge, those long-term contracts are the qualitative backbone. They provide a predictable revenue flow, and the essential infrastructure itself creates high barriers to entry, reinforcing business stability.
For Realty Income, the net lease model is its superpower. It shifts operational costs to tenants, insulating the company and creating a remarkably stable income stream. That monthly dividend is a testament to this model.
Now, what about the warning signs that do precede a dividend cut? For well-managed companies, it's rarely out of the blue. Look for consistently compressing operating margins, increasing debt-to-equity ratios, or declining free cash flow.
A shrinking cash flow, even if net income is positive, means less cash is available for dividends, reinvestment, or debt repayment. That's a significant red flag. Management's commentary and guidance revisions are also important indicators.
Think about the energy sector during prolonged low oil prices. Many companies saw earnings and cash flow evaporate, forcing dividend cuts for survival. Changes in dividend policy itself, like shifting from growth to maintenance, can also be a subtle signal.
Let's delve deeper into those non-cash items that distort earnings. Depreciation and amortization are key. If a company buys a $100 million factory with a 20-year life, it records $5 million in depreciation annually.
That $5 million reduces reported profit but doesn't represent a cash outflow in that year. The cash outflow happened when the factory was purchased. So, companies with significant assets have higher depreciation, potentially depressing net income.
Amortization works similarly for intangible assets. It's crucial to distinguish between expenses that reduce profit but don't drain cash, and those that represent actual cash outflows. Free cash flow helps us see this.
Consider this: Company A has $15 million in net income and pays $12 million in dividends, an 80% payout ratio. But its free cash flow is only $10 million after capital expenditures. Its FCF payout ratio is 120%.
That's a stark example. The earnings-based ratio looks fine, but the cash flow-based one screams caution. This highlights why understanding the right metric is so critical for dividend analysis.
And what about those special dividends? If a company sells a division for a profit and issues a large one-time dividend, it can skyrocket the payout ratio for that year.
For instance, if a company earns $1 per share, pays a $0.60 dividend, and then issues a $4 special dividend alongside its regular $0.60, its total payout is $4.60. If earnings that year were boosted to $3, the ratio becomes 153%.
But the underlying business is still earning $1 and paying $0.60. You need to strip out that special dividend and the one-time gain to assess the core business's dividend coverage. It's a temporary event.
It's also worth noting that some companies intentionally maintain a higher payout ratio because their growth prospects are limited. Think of a mature utility company with stable, predictable earnings.
In such cases, there aren't many high-return reinvestment opportunities. Management's focus is on efficiently returning capital to shareholders. A 75% or 80% payout ratio might be perfectly sustainable for them.
Or consider a company that just finished a massive capital expenditure cycle. Earnings might have been depressed during construction, leading to a high payout ratio temporarily. But once new facilities are operational, cash flow should surge.
This brings us back to capital allocation strategy. A company generating strong free cash flow but reinvesting it poorly might be less attractive than one with slightly less cash flow that pays a sustainable, larger portion. It's about balance.
Kenview, Enbridge, and Realty Income really highlight this. Their business models are designed for stable, predictable cash flows. Kenview's brands are sticky, Enbridge's infrastructure is essential and contracted, and Realty Income's net lease model insulates it.
When we see a payout ratio above 100% for Kenview, we look at its free cash flow. The demand for consumer staples is resilient, translating to stable cash flows. The question is whether non-cash charges and CapEx are manageable.
For Enbridge, DCF is paramount. Pipeline operations involve huge upfront investments and significant depreciation. DCF strips out these non-cash charges and capital expenditures to reveal the true cash available for dividends.
And for Realty Income, FFO is the key. It adjusts for depreciation on properties and gains/losses from property sales, giving a clearer picture of operating cash flow for a REIT. That monthly dividend is supported by this adjusted metric.
So, in conclusion, Kenview, Enbridge, and Realty Income demonstrate that a high dividend payout ratio, even exceeding 100% based on net income, doesn't automatically signal an impending dividend cut.
It underscores the essential truth: understanding how a company generates its cash and what metric best reflects its dividend-paying ability is fundamental for income investors. The payout ratio is a diagnostic tool, not a definitive prognosis.
When that ratio climbs, it's a signal to investigate further, not necessarily to panic sell. We need to look at free cash flow, DCF, FFO, and qualitative factors like brand strength, contracts, and business model stability.
By using the appropriate metrics and considering the broader context, investors can better assess the true sustainability of dividends, even in companies with seemingly alarming payout ratios.
This approach helps differentiate between temporary accounting distortions or one-time events and genuine fundamental weakness in a company's ability to generate cash.
Ultimately, sound dividend analysis requires a blend of quantitative rigor using the right metrics and qualitative judgment understanding the business itself.
It's about looking past the headline numbers to the underlying economic reality of the business and its ability to consistently generate cash flow for its shareholders.
Exactly. Let's summarize the key factors we've discussed today. We've seen how the interpretation of the dividend payout ratio requires careful consideration.
A ratio over 100% based on net income often signals the need to examine free cash flow, DCF, or FFO, rather than assuming an immediate dividend cut. Over-reliance on just the net income ratio can lead to premature, poor investment decisions.
We also highlighted the impact of non-cash items like depreciation and amortization. These reduce reported earnings but don't represent cash outflows, especially significant for asset-heavy companies.
Ignoring these can lead to an inaccurate assessment of a company's true cash-generating ability and its capacity to sustain dividends.
And the importance of company-specific metrics like FCF, DCF, and FFO cannot be overstated. Using the appropriate metric for each industry is crucial for understanding financial health.
Moving to strengths and insights, stable business models with predictable revenues, like those in utilities or net lease real estate, can often sustain higher payout ratios due to consistent cash generation.
Qualitative factors such as brand strength, long-term contracts, and resilient business models are vital qualitative indicators that support dividend sustainability, even when quantitative metrics seem strained.
For challenges and opportunities, we noted that failing to use the appropriate metric can obscure true financial health. Also, highly cyclical businesses or those facing disruption may struggle to maintain high payout ratios.
Neglecting qualitative factors like competitive landscape or management strategy can lead to overlooking underlying business weaknesses that could impact future cash flows and dividends.
So, the key takeaway is that a dividend payout ratio over 100% isn't always a death knell. It's a signal to dig deeper, use the right tools, and understand the specific context of the business.
That's a wrap on decoding the dividend payout ratio. We hope this discussion has provided valuable insights for your income investing strategies.
Thanks for tuning in to the Mbaga Media Finance Podcast. We'll catch you next time.